I can't believe it. Boy, since I came to this last meeting, I didn't have the two additional things at the other end. It used to just be compulsive overeating, and I thought that was the greatest thing I would ever face, and it was not. It's kind of funny how God never gives you more than you can handle, but it's hard to believe when you're in the moment and experiencing whatever the challenge may be that you don't believe that you can get through it. But it has made me a lot stronger. It made me a lot more, much more humble when I meet people who also deal with bulimia and anorexia in our program. Because sometimes I know now that they can kind of feel left out, or like I'm not as qualified, say, as someone who eats 50,000 calories a week or a day. And I have a greater understanding and appreciation, because I was one of those people before I got into the program who'd say, oh, if I only were anorexic, I could lose all my weight. It would be easy. Oh, my God, I was so disgustingly wrong. And I say disgusting just because I know what has to happen for it to happen. And then purging was a whole other experience for me. I used to hate growing up. I still do. But I found a way to do it, and I found a way to tolerate it. And I thought, in my crazy head, I thought this was somehow a solution. And that was after, at that point, it was 17 years in program, 17 years of continuous abstinence. And I thought growing up was a solution. It snuck up on me, because I actually have a congenital stomach condition that makes me sick. But it was just my disease piggybacked on that, because I couldn't eat, couldn't keep food down, and I threw up a lot. And the disease snuck in. Because all of a sudden, one day, my partner goes, he could hear me in the back. I think it's all private, and it's my own little quiet world. Now, he goes, you know what? I just got to tell you this. He goes, it sounds like you were trying to throw up. It doesn't sound like you were throwing, like, just natural. And that was a moment, you know, my immediate response was some choice words and, you know, mind your own business, you need to call your sponsor, stop managing me. And that probably... That was my knee-jerk reaction, and, you know, because he's my partner, you know, he could take it. he's been down the recovery path himself, of course. So, but he was right, and thank God that he heard that and loved me enough to say, I'm going to tell you the truth, whether you like it or not, and I don't care what your response is. And he opened my eyes to the fact that, oh my gosh, I'm doing this. I'm doing the thing that I used to think was like this God's gift to weight loss, because that's all I thought. All I have to do is lose weight, and my whole world would be better. And that is a very typical newcomer point of view, too. We come in for the vanity, and we stay for the sanity. Some of these cliches we say, and when you first hear them, you think, oh, whatever, right? Day at a time. They're all true, and they come true. Like, you see it happening in your own life, and you're like, someone very smart came up with these phrases, because they're reminding you that it doesn't just happen. It takes work. It takes effort. It takes pain. It takes suffering. But it also takes pleasure. And it takes a life. Like, your life grows exponentially. And when you're not focused on stuffing your face or purging your body or not eating at all, it's amazing what happens in between. And that has happened to me. I've gone through multiple. I came in here. I was working in the entertainment business on the marketing and sales side, making a big income, and everything was so golden. But it wasn't. I was 535 pounds at my top weight. I'm down 278 pounds. And do I have? But that's not at all anything to do, because that came way later. The weight loss came later. In the beginning, I used to moan and groan to my sponsor. You know, I see some of our fellows come in and they lose weight really quick. Like, their first year, they lose 100 pounds and it falls off of them. And they're like, oh, it's so wonderful, and I wear smaller clothes, and I hated it. I would be sitting there just steaming, literally, because I'd be sweating like a farm animal anyway. But, yeah, just being me. But it was insane. I was, what are you talking about? You know, I hate that person. Why did they get to lose weight and I get to sit here? Just all of me. But I've learned. It's everyone's experience is different. Some people need to lose that 100 pounds so they don't leave the program. And they see that there's the emotional, their emotional recovery, and that their life will grow and get better. Others, I guess like me, God determined he doesn't need to lose weight right away. In fact, he needs to gain some first and get some work. Like fat humility. And I look back and I appreciate it now because it did, if it had come off right away, I would have walked out of here. I would have said, I graduated. I have my degree. I'm out of here. And I would not be here now. And I'd probably be in a hospital somewhere or not here anymore. Because at 500 plus pounds, even if you go down 100 pounds, still 400 plus pounds, you're not there yet. You're not in a place where you could manage. And I couldn't, like, the stare coming in here, are you kidding me? There are meetings I went to that I didn't go to because I go, no, I'm not going to go up two flights of stairs to get to that meeting. Thank you, God, but no. You know, because I couldn't go up. I'd be sweating and breathing hard and have no recovery. Now, I may go up, come up these stairs and be breathing hard for like a minute. You know, normal 2 minute, you know, way to measure cardiovascular. My doctor told me that if you recover within 2 minutes and you're not like breathing hard for 30 or however long, you're okay. You're in good cardiovascular condition. Not maybe athlete, but you're good. And I can come up these stairs now and I can walk and I'm fine. My legs work, thank God. My body still continues working. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, I have these wonderful moves I get to live with, and they're much smaller than they used to be. But I have rolls, I have stretch marks, I have all these, you know, the, what do they call it, the wreckage of our past or the evidence of my abuse to my own body. But I'm so grateful for every single one. I actually like my body. I like everything about it. It works. It functions. One of the practices I did that I actually. It's hard to believe my sponsor suggested this because he's kind of conservative. But he said, he goes, get in front of a mirror because he saw how much body dysmorphia and how much body hatred I had. And I needed to get rid of that. And I needed to get into a frame of mind that was a frame of gratitude. Be grateful for what you have because if it's not, there's people who are in, you know, lots of different modes of treachery other than their legs. So you need to be grateful. He said, I want you to take off your clothes. And all of them stand in front of a full-length mirror and touch parts of your body that you are not, that you hate, that you think is your bad part. And then thank that part who touch it, wherever it may be, touch it and go, thank you for functioning today. Thank you for not failing me today. Because I could be touching here, but that could actually be my kidneys, my liver, any number of organs that could fail. And I did that, and that really, I did it. I was willing to take my sponsor's guidance and do that. And it sounds bizarre, it sounds weird when you hear it, but it worked for me. It forced me into saying, I may not like this, how it looks, but it's working. And I'm not in a hospital, I'm not having to be transported anywhere. I need to be grateful that I survived 535 pounds for well over a decade, and that the wreckage was not as bad as it could have been. And so he taught me to have that gratitude, and I lost that dysmorphia. I can look in I can walk by big mirrored windows now, and I look at my body. I can look at me. I don't just look like, you know, the heads up, the neck up. I think a lot of people, I've heard that a lot of fellows share that. I used to do that neck up. And I would even look, if there was a full window, dear Lord, God forbid you make me look at what I really look like, how wide I really am, or how wide in any direction. I mean, at 500, I was weight 65 pounds. That's 5'5" around. My partner is 5'5" tall. So, I look at him, and it reminds me all the time, I was as big around as he was tall. And I wore a weight 65 pant and those were skin tight on me. I remember thinking, oh wow, these were tailored just a couple years ago to me. And they, I mean, I can't afford to go get tailored right now, but that's life. And but I'm grateful that I can still get into them. Yes, I have to cinch the waist and do stuff, but it's just, it reminds me also that God has blessed me with the weight loss, but not in recent times. It's not forever, because again, I would have walked out of these rooms. There's so much to find in these rooms. I walked in here today not having anything on my mind. I see Jen on the street and I'm like, oh my gosh. And I see all these familiar faces in here, and it warms my soul, and it reminds me why people keep saying, come to the meetings in person, It's different because I think it's easy to forget when you're on Zoom. It's very easy. Zoom is very convenient, and I will never say I love Zoom meetings. But it also is a different experience being live with everyone, getting the hugs. And you know, now we're out of the COVID year. You know, now COVID's become endemic. We can hug each other. We can see each other and share things. And I feel so blessed to be here today. It inspires my hope. I think that's one of the biggest things in this program that we need to share with each other is hope. And with the newcomer, hope. Hope is what gets us through. Hope is what got me through. It's what got me to here. The fact this shirt was bought in a clearance bin by my partner and that I can buy any clothes out of the clearance bin is a miracle. Like, I'm so grateful for that. And it's so silly because people think, whatever. I never could buy cheap clothes. I had to go to the big boy store and get everything that's custom made for big people, and they're super expensive. And now I could just wear clothes, and I don't have to think about it. I don't have to go to the special store with the special name, and which was a stigma for me for a lot of time. And these little things I'm grateful for, and I'm grateful for the weight loss, but I'm really grateful for the sanity, because I'm crazy. We went to a buffet last weekend, and I can go to a buffet now, and I get a little bit. My plate's not keeping. I used to get the 5-pound plates, the 10-pound plates, you know, and just pile it up as if you can't go back. I always was in that deficit thinking, like, if I don't pile it up, somehow whatever I like's not going to be there. Or I'm going to starve to death in between, like, trying to get my plate to the buffet, you know, back. You know, and Lord forbid I get up again. You know, that was a lot of work in those days, in the old days. You know, that was a lot. So I don't do that anymore. Sorry, I'm not scared. I just squirt myself in water. I'm not scared of that. Like, that fear has been lifted, which was the basis for my compulsive overeating. I always was in deficit thinking. There's not enough. I used to have hundreds of dollars worth of canned food in my cabinets in the kitchen. Like, there wasn't plates. There weren't silver. Everything was filled with food. I remember when I moved from Northern California down to Southern California for work. It's funny, when you move, you have to unpack and I had no clue how crazy I was until I saw cabinets filled with food. And that's kind of one of the things that prompted me when I moved down here. I moved to a place on West Sentinella Boulevard, just outside Inglewood. I have no idea what that meant. I was in this little box apartment, and it was nice, though, very nice, but the moving truck somehow got lost on the 5 between Northern California and Southern California. How, I don't know. And I remember going, I need food. And the internet, the Wi-Fi was brand new back then, so this was a long time ago. I've been down here for over 20 years. So, yeah, it was a while ago. It was before Wi-Fi was common, but this place had it. And I had a laptop that actually could connect to it. So I went on the laptop and I ordered all this food. Like, I mean, I ordered pizza. I just ordered a lot of food. And I basically ate myself into a blackout, which is what I used to do. That was my old way. And when I woke up the next morning, I was on the floor in what would be the living room. And because I didn't have any furniture, so I just slept on the floor. And I had a ring of garbage around me, a ring of food garbage, all empty. Oh, there was not a morsel of anything left. But it was a pretty big, I'm a pretty big guy, and I was even bigger then, so it was a pretty big ring. And I realized that day, that moment, I remember I said to myself out loud, this is not normal. This is not normal. Like, that's the only words I could come up with. I knew I had heard of OA in Northern California. I went to one meeting. It was in Blackhawk, which is kind of like Beverly Hills of that area. And there were three wives in there. They're wonderful women. But there wasn't a lot of recovery, and they really did talk about their husbands a lot. And it wasn't my thing at the time. And so it didn't work for me there. But that's why God brought me down here, to the Mecca of OA. And literally the Mecca. And I got online, and I remember I said to God, because God was my enemy back then, put him up, dude. And I told him, these are my requirements. This meeting needs to be close. There needs to be a gay person there, or more, one or more. It needs to be easy to get to, because I don't know this area at all. And those are my three requirements, which are, you know, it could be a pretty tall choice depending on where you live. I got online. The first meeting I found was a meeting was in the log, the old log cabin. And I walked in, and I see all these women. It's these women sitting in a big circle with this big blue book. And I'm like, ugh, it looks like a Bible. And I was very anti any religious establishment then. And because I was at war with God, and which is a losing battle. Anyway, in hindsight. So I get there, and I sit down and go through the meeting. And they give me a book. They had a big book for me because I had no idea. And we all read in the circle. At the end of the meeting, this secretary walks up to me very sweetly and goes, you're welcome. We know you're a newcomer. It was wonderful to have you here. But I just want to ask that you find a different meeting because this is a women's focused meeting. And that's why you're the only male in the entire room. And there's like 35 women. And she goes, fortunately, no one felt, we did a little group conscious before, like when you walked in and we said it was okay because we never want to turn away. You know, tradition, you don't want to turn away a newcomer. But I went to a women's meeting when I wanted gay men in West Hollywood. So God was like, you're going to learn, son. And then I found the second meeting, I had similar requirements. Ended up at the Westchester 100 Congress meeting. And those, again, a lot of women in that meeting, but amazing. Amazing people. And I don't care if they're male, female, in between, whatever, trans, whatever it is. They saved my life that day. A woman at the door named Elizabeth was the greeter. Some people might remember Elizabeth or know Elizabeth, but she gave me a bear hug. She hugged everyone as they came in. I thought I was always touchy-feely, but I was the opposite. I hated being touched because I didn't like my body. I was sweating profusely, because I had so much insulation. I was always uncomfortable. Everything was tight. And she gave me this bear hug. And she wouldn't let go. Like, I was trying. I'm like, trying to get out of it. And she didn't let go. And I swear, I heard a crack. Something inside of me is like a switch being thrown. And that was the first moment that I really opened up to this program and realized I belong here. I sat in the back, in the half measures row, so I could escape if I needed to, if it was too much. And there was no judgment there. Everyone sits there one time or another, and some of us sit there voluntarily, even many years in. So it was, thank you, it was incredible. I was in this meeting. There's this wall of these powerful, I call them now, I say powerful women. And they were amazing, and Lonnie was one of them, and Corinne was there, and the leader of that meeting was this little man who told my story, and what, you know what, he was gay too, but subtly gay, he was not like me, I don't know what I do, but I always feel like I'm not subtle, after the meeting, I remember I was pouring sweat, like I was so humiliated because I was just pouring sweat. And I walk up to him, I'm shaking and my voice is shaking, and I go, will you be my sponsor? And he said, sure, give me a call at this time tomorrow and we'll see where it goes from there. And I've been with him for 20 years, 19 years of abstinence, 20 years in program. I have not had the change. He's amazing. He's a miracle. And he's let me know now that I know I'm a miracle. We all are miracles because we're here today. Right now, I love the comment when people say, right now, you're abstinent. Even if you weren't before, even if you binged for breakfast, right now you're abstinent. And that, I don't realize the power of that statement until now, 19 years later, I'm like, I get it. And I'm sorry, my top weight was 535 pounds. I'm 19 years abstinent, 20 years in program. My first year, went to the Olympics, 2006 Olympics, and traded with my alcoholic friend his drink. I gave him my drink, and he gave me his dessert. And that was the end of that first try at abstinence. Even though I was trying to be the rock star of OA, that silly concept I had back then. And that was when we had the kitchen sink, and it was like 200 people trapped in that old room. And not trapped, I'm sorry, they were trapped. They were in that old room, and to me, that's what it felt like back then, because I was a newcomer. And I remember my sponsor looked at me when I came home from that trip and I told him what happened. He goes, okay, you're gonna tell everyone at Serenity Sunday. Roseanne was in the front row that day. Our founder, she was sitting there, and then she was sitting there with other people who I understand were very significant people. and I didn't know that, but I was still sweating, and I mean, it was pouring down. And I get up there, and I had to say what happened. I had to tell that story in a longer version, and it was slightly longer than I just did. But I was dying, and then some of the long timers that were up front, actually approached me after the meeting. They said, you are so full of that. They go, you are ridiculous. They go, but this is the first moment we've seen you be honest when you get up there to the podium. They go, everything else you've done has been BS and ridiculous. This is like three elders telling me, you know, we know you're a lying sack of blah, blah, blah. And I remember I was hurt at first, but now I can say in hindsight, thank God for them. Thank God they were willing to love me enough. They didn't even know me, but love me enough to tell me the truth. And from then on, I stopped the BS. Not only at home, but here. I don't come into the rooms now and tell a story, like, make up my story. I don't come into the rooms worrying, you know, making sure I'm covered up as possible so you don't, because I used to think the bigger the clothes, the less you could see how fat I was. Are you serious? And I remember my dad criticized me coming. You know, you look like a sailboat. You look like you're a sail on a billowing sail. And he goes, if you get the wind, you're going to blow. I'm like, Dad, I'm 500 pounds. I'm not blowing away anytime soon. Nothing could blow this away. Maybe a hurricane. But I never realized, and you know, now I wear clothes that are a little more fitted, that I would have been so uncomfortable even in this shirt in prior years. And I love that I just wear it. And I'm like, however I look, I look. You know, and what's funny is people react to that. If you are okay with how you look, it's kind of a big deal. No one else cares then. But if I'm making a big deal of it in my head, then people notice. They like can tell when you're insecure or not confident or uncomfortable. And they kind of feed on that. So I love myself. I can say it. It took quite a few years of recovery to say, I love myself. I love my body. I love how I look today. I don't look the same as I did. And there aren't many pictures from that era. I have a hard time finding them because I avoided cameras like they're in a play. Because why do I want evidence? Why do I want pictures of what I look like? I didn't like me at all. So this program has really changed my life. It gave me hope. It reminds me, I constantly get to rely on a power beyond myself. Every morning I go, God, I say the third step prayer, I say the serenity prayer, and I'll wrap up. And then I say, Fill my spiritual void with your love, light, and hope. Fill your spiritual void so I can share that with my students, with whoever needs it along my path, so I can share it. And then please, let me only work to fulfill your will to the highest level. Thank you for letting me share. Oh, I'm sorry, I was on my phone. There is no break at this meeting. We will now pass the basket for our seventh tradition. A donation of $5 is suggested, but any amount would be greatly appreciated. May I have another volunteer to read the 12 traditions? Please be quiet while we are reading our traditions. Thank you. Oh, perfect.
Thank you. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose to carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but you may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media in communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of these positions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you so much.
This is the time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of my opinions are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. Thank goodness. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast. All right. Yes.
Yes,
Lenny.
From one long timer to another long timer. Terrific. Just terrific. So when you get down and you want to get your program going again and get energized in it again, what do you do?
Okay, so when I get down and I need to kind of reinvigorate my program and remind myself that I have a program to fall back on, what do I do? I usually sit down. I love to say the third step prayer. For some reason, that prayer has always... No, I say always. How arrogant. It did not always connect to me. These were just prayers at one point. But at some point, I can't say when or where, but it connects to me a lot. Because it's all about surrender and saying it doesn't need to be my will. That's when I get down, is when I start doing Christian's will. Christian's will got me to 538 pounds. Christian will gets me into a program I need to do the rest of my life. Christian's will gets me a 9 a.m. On a Saturday morning in a room. And all of that is good. But also, all of that is like, you know, there's other people who got to sleep in today. And they, you know, that's the price I pay for this. But when I do the third step prayer and then I connect with God, I learned to talk with God very early on, just very plainly. I always say my version of my higher power, I don't have to pray, I don't have to be formal. I could even cuss and be angry with him. And for me, it's a him. But of course, in my world, only in my world, cuckoo world. But that's usually how I do. I reconnect and I say, fill me with your love, light, and hope, because that usually means I don't have any when I'm getting down and angry, or if I'm getting down and I'm in my will. And I say, please let me only fulfill your will to the highest level today. And that snaps me out of it usually. If not, then the next thing I have to do, and I don't like doing it, is I write my 10 things that I am. And that's something my sponsor had me do. Love them to death, but writing is not something I enjoy, but it works. Whether I like it or not, it works. Because this program's not always about enjoying and what you enjoy to do. Because what I enjoyed to do was eating all those calories and being 500 pounds, apparently. And that's not what I want now in my life. And so I write. I'll sit down and write down 10 things I'm grateful for. And that always snaps me out of that self-centered, because that's usually where I'm at when I'm upset. It's self-centered, egotistical, or self-righteous, some form of self. Me, me, me. And he has a song, me, 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 I. And, you know, he literally will kind of sing that to me on the phone and say, you need to get out of there. So that's how I get out of the dumps when I'm feeling down. Yes, sir.
Hi. Could you talk about your spiritual journey through OA and how you built?
Sure. Can I talk about my spiritual journey through OA? When I came in, I was my religion of origin is Latin Catholic, very hardcore, very everything that is in the Catholic version of the Bible is law. You know, you follow it without question. And I pretty much so rebelled pretty quick from that. I am a child of incest and molestation from my father, who was such a good Catholic. And
quote unquote. Sorry, no insult meant for anyone, but that's just where, that's my story and my truth. And I realized that that is what formal religion can spawn. I don't want any part of it. But I took it to the extreme, because everything when I was not in program was extremes. There was always black and white. It was never any gray area. So I was like, I hate God. God's my enemy. Look what he, you know, I'm adopted, and I had this horrible man choose to adopt me and abuse me and make my life heck for so long. And so I took up that position to begin with. Then once I got into program, and that was 30 years of me, doing things my way, which got me to 535 pounds, which I could have been higher. I just refused to get on a scale after that. And all the health issues that came with that, and the life I was leading was misery. So in the midterm, I came to program, and I was told, make up your own higher power. It doesn't have to conform to anything. It doesn't have to be for anyone else. It's you. It's your personal connection. But you have to have it. Because I remember my sponsor said to me one day, if you're your own higher power, then he goes, I would like an apple tree in my front yard now. And I go, I can't do that. I could plant a seed. And he goes, no. I want a fully mature apple tree with apples growing on it, waiting to be picked now. And I go, I can't do that. And he goes, then I guess you're not God. I guess you're not a higher power. Because a higher power could probably do that. He goes, so in the logic, following the logic, you need to come up with something that's going to work for you that's not you. Because you got you here. You got you all these things. So how about trying something different? And I was just at the edge of being willing to listen. Like, I was willing with them. But it took a little work. And I was able to say, okay, my higher power, I can cuss, I can yell, I can scream, I could be that crazy person in the car yelling at no one. And that will be my God. I will no longer be at battle with my God. Because I lost. I lost big time. And that was the midpoint where I started to say, okay, I can connect spiritually to something, and I don't have to go to a building to do it. And I don't have to conform to any formalized faith to do that. It's mine. It's my gift to myself. And then today, it's evolved into, every morning I wake up and I connect. I say my prayers. I ask for love, light, and hope, because I have none of my own. If I did, I wouldn't be here. I don't have any love, light, and hope of my own, so I ask for God to fill me with His. And I ask, let me please reveal your will to me so I can fulfill it today. And I have awesome days. I work with kids. I work with elementary school students. And they can be a little cuckoo, but I'm cuckoo. So it works well. And but I get to work with them, and it's so rewarding, so fulfilling. And the only way I'm able to work with them and really help them and raise them up is when I ask God to fill me with His love, light, and hope. And I ask God to give it to me so I can share it. Not just for me. I need to share it. And that's been a big change. It's like, I want it so I can share it with others. I don't want it just for me. It used to be all just for me. And that's been a big change. But developing my higher power has led me to this very happy place where I'm not abusing myself any longer. I don't live in the absence of spirituality or faith. And I know that what I have is all I need. And it will change and evolve if I need more, it'll become more. If I need less, it'll become less. So I hope that answers the question. Thank you. Yes.
Oh, my first abstinence was I had the big book and I wrote red light, yellow light, and green. I just did that backwards. Like green, yellow, red. Of course I do it backwards. How am I? That's me. And I wrote a whole bunch of foods under each of those colors. And which I laugh about it now, because that was the most ridiculous
dysfunctional thing I could do. That is not how my mind works. That's not how my recovery works. But I didn't know that then. And I thought that was my abstinence. All these huge lists of foods I can't touch, you know, and the yellow light foods were okay, which really meant green light, and when it should have been red. And so that's why I was able to go on this trip and just surrender it so easy, because it was BS. I did it for my sponsor, not for me. I did it to impress all of you, not for me. I did it to impress you guys. So it was for me in a very self-centered way, but I was trying to impress. I wanted to be the king of OA. I wanted to be the rock star of OA. And let me assure you, I will never be the rock star of OA. I will never be any of that, but I thought that's what I needed to do. And that's what I came into with that ego and that ridiculous, like, oh, I need to impress everyone. No. But that was how I came up with that first subject. Today, it's simple. My abstinence is black and white, so I can live my life in the gray. And I love the gray. Ooh, does the gray feel good? I lived so long with that yes, no, on, off, black and white life that I was miserable. Now I get to be flexible and I can say, hey, you know, like, again, I couldn't work with children if I were black and white still. The previous version of me when I came in could not work with children. Because let me tell you, children are gray. They're as gray gets. But I love it. I embrace it. I love that I'm not trapped by black and white anymore. My food's easy. I have foods. I don't eat refined sugar and I don't eat refined flour. That's it. It's simple. I used to have that big long list. I was setting me up to fail. For me, I'm only speaking for me though. So for some people, those work very well. Me, I needed this simple two-item list that just covers everything, my main things I feed on if I'm going to be crazy. And that's how different it is today. And the spiritual component. God is a part of everything I do these days. God is just a name I use. I know people who say flowers or dust. It's great. Whatever works. And that gets me through. It makes it very easy for me. And having God on my side and know that I'm fulfilling His will. His will is not for me to eat or binge on Starburst. Oh, I'm like, gosh, I keep doing that. I don't think there's a rule about it. But anyway, for this meeting. But it doesn't have me binging on all these foods that I'll admit, I still kind of dream about at times. But I don't go for them. I don't buy them. I don't have any desire for them. You know, I think about them because, you know what? The kids are eating them around me. And, you know, and they're eating all these things I love. They have pizza all the time. I want pizza all the time. But, blessedly, I don't have any drive to that. And it's because God's with me every day. Thank you. And my point is, you'd be sorry. Jude?
So because of your physical condition, when you feel nauseated, and your disease wants to take you in a different direction, how do you not do that?
I learned what it feels like when my congenital issue is, when it's legitimate, not just from my issue, my health condition, and then when it's just stress. Or me, because, oh my Lord, I had to learn to identify that, and I do now. And what I do when I feel that, when it's anxiety, I go, okay, one, what's something I can do that will take my mind off things? And the most mindless thing I could do is, I'm an old gamer, and I will go on and play one of my games that totally takes me out of my head, because, let's put it, there aren't a lot of games that engage our minds so much yet. And that takes me out, or I will either call or talk to my partner and say, let's go for a walk, let's do something, get me out of this house, because obviously I've been here too long, and I'm isolating, and that's many times is when my anxiety sets in, because the worst neighborhood in the world is in my skull. And if you leave me tromping around in the worst neighborhood for too long, I start to think I'm pretty clever. And I start to think, oh, well, what about the future, which I can't change yet? And what about the past? Ooh, I bought this, I bought that, and I shouldn't have done it because now I don't have that money, and now I don't have this, I don't have rent, I don't have whatever it may be. And I start going in this spiral. He calls it the death spiral. And that's a wonderful name for it. Because it's the death of my recovery if I go down that spiral all the way. So that's, I always try to distract myself. And I don't stay home. COVID, I really got linked into that isolation. And it renewed my want to be isolated. And fortunately, I know now being in recovery allows me to say, get out of the house. Go somewhere. Even if you have to just go drive somewhere, drive to the coast. I don't live that far from it. You know, go drive there and watch the ocean. Something that is so vast you can't even comprehend it. Yes.
So where have you been?
I'm sorry.
Where have you been?
Where have I been?
Yes.
Oh, I know what you're asking. Well, like I said, COVID really got me into isolation mode. So Zoom meetings became very, very, very big for me. I go to 3 Zoom meetings a week, and I just I had real trouble snapping out of the isolation, and I am now. My partner got fed up with it. He's like, we're not going to eat in the house. We're not going to have dinner here. We're going to go out in the world, see people, because I can't do this. I can't be in the house all day long, every day, every night. He goes, this is insane. He goes, we're going out. And again, thank God, you know, God put this man in my life that forces me to get out. Well, he doesn't force me. I mean, I could say no. But then I could also live alone and just be me. So, you know, what do you want? And so I know that is God working through him, saying, we're not going to stay here. We're not going to sit and have dinner on a TV tray in front of the no. And there's no program we need to watch that's not going to be there later on. Everything's streaming now, so we don't have to. We can watch anything whenever we want. And it's such a blessing to have that, because now I'm not scared to get out. My car sat for like 3 years, not being driven at all, hardly. You know, and now you know I'm driving daily. I recently started this job with working with kids that I have to drive to every day. I love being with the kids again. I love being with out in the world again. And it's only because of this program that I even could comprehend doing that. Because in the old days, in the early days before program, I would have just gone with the isolation because I would have thought I'm comfortable. But now I realize program is rarely about being comfortable. At least I can only speak for myself. You know, I can hear Tony go, "Only talk for yourself." For me, comfort is deadly. Comfort is 550 pounds. Comfort, or 35 pounds, whatever I was at. Comfort is eating all the foods I want. Comfort is all of that. That's Christian. Higher power, spiritual being, and in recovery is getting out there and living my life in the world and being able to do that. Thanks for letting me share.